One of the things that we had been discussing when we last
met
was the idea that you know Eliyahu doesn't seem to really understand his role vis-a-vis the people, and there's no question that he's you know in Ish Emes. We talked about his connection to the boy that he brought back to life, of Yonah ben Amittai, the man of truth. I don't think anybody's questioning Eliyahu Navi's commitment to the truth. But at the same time, there's a very significant concern with respect to, you know, Eliyahu Navi's sense of integration. Did Ahav, and we'll talk a little bit more tonight, continue to discuss Izebel, did they deserve severe consequences for their, you know, incredibly malignant form of leadership? Sure. Were the people meant to suffer those consequences? That's a more complicated question, what their role was in all of this. And that's going to be center stage tonight. Tonight we're also going to see the beginning of maybe the... I don't want to be accused of hyperbole, but maybe like the greatest reality show on earth, you know, ever... was what we call the Hora Hashah, Behar HaKarmel, when Eliyahu HaNavi, you know, gets all of the Nevi'ei HaBaal, which we'll talk about tonight, 450 of them to come down. And, you know, there are two cows, two bulls. And, you know, will the real God please, you know, show up? That's very, you know, amazing at many different levels. Not the least of which was the halachic violation that entailed. There's a restriction against bringing a korban anywhere outside of Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, if you will, after the Beis HaMikdash was established in Yerushalayim. Lo haisa shas heter la'olam, ki lo vatem ad atel ha-menucha vil-anachala. And for Eliyahu to call for, you know, a korban to be brought outside of Yerushalayim in, you know, flagrant violation of what is an Isser Chamor, it's an Isser Kares. This is not like a, you know, a trivial violation, not that anything would be trivial to Eliyahu, is itself extremely fascinating. And I think that is something that I'd really like to get to. Effie was just coming back. I could just go upstairs to the office, but Effie had to come back from Marv and Kiddush Levana. Effie, I was slow walking it. I didn't want you to...
Right, yeah, so you were waiting for me.
Well, no, you know, Shelo Yehei Chote Niskar, but the opposite of that is Shelo Yehei, you know, Mekayim Mitzvah Nenash. So, you know, this... You know, so,
okay. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so I just was introducing a little bit and getting ready for... Right, so here, tonight we're also going to meet the figure of Ovadia. And so I subtitled to tonight's year, Ahav, Ovadia, and Eliyahu. And the reason for that is because Ovadia is actually right in the middle. In some ways caught between Ahav and Eliyahu. And he's a fascinating character to understand. He's the only person in Tanakh, we're going to see this in a moment, who's described. Anybody kind of remember how Ovadia is described? He's the only person who achieves this appellation. Jeopardy. an appellation that's not used in the context of anybody else, not Moshe Rabbeinu, not Aaron HaKohen, not David HaMelech, not Avraham Avinu. We're going to see that Ovadia is described as Hayayare Es Hashem Me'od. Not just a Yare Hashem. Yare Hashem is already very rarefied territory. You know, Avraham Avinu territory. Atayadati Ki Yare Elokim. Atav lo chasach les binchas yichidecha. You know, Avram had to go through the Akedah to earn that title. It's like they're not giving that away. So Yare es Hashem me'od, that he was truly, you know, reverential towards God. So we're going to see that this is a person that in some ways can hold his own with Eliyahu HaNavi, and who, according to Chazal, may very well have been a Navi himself. The Navi Ovadia may be traced to this individual. So that's going to be a very important point to look at as well. So Let's take a look. We'll begin this quite a bit to cover tonight. The Malbim sets us up very beautifully for the end of the drought, which we'll see at the very beginning, with a fascinating idea. The last thing we saw, of course, was the resuscitation of the child. Ulam, this is the first source. Be'ez hechia sayelet hayamuchrach lashuv midarko zeha otzer v'soger ba'ad hashefa nepachu ki hutzrach lahorid shefa chayos v'chayim al hayelet uvazen iftechu kol mekoros hachayim asher nizgiru al yedei atziras geshamim shemivin hachayim la'olam al hachay v'siyah chasada v'lachin amar Hashem ki ata yitin gamatar ki kvar amar la'asurim pikeach v'etna matar. So to explain what the Malbim is suggesting here, saying that once Eliyahu asked for God's intercession with this child from whom life has been taken, and Eliyahu pleads with God to bring this child back, so we have to understand, I'm just paraphrasing what the Malbim is saying, that amongst the three maftechos that there are, there's the mafteach of tchiyas ha-neisim, of resuscitation, and right alongside that, there's the mafteach of Gishamim, because to bring rains down from the heavens, the Malbim is saying, is very similar conceptually to the idea of bringing life back to earth, very similar to the idea of bringing life back to this child. So Eliyahu was sort of compelled into a situation where he would have to ask for divine mercy, ask for divine intercession. And apparently that's not something that a person can be mivakesh lechatzayin. You can't just ask that in isolation, but that requires, cosmically, the Malbim is saying, a certain shefa, a certain overflow of divine benevolence towards the earth, and that's what made it, you know, in the immediate aftermath, the Malbim thinks, whether or not that's consistent with the psukim, we'll question in a second, but that's what made the idea of rain, you know, coming right now, so imminent. Okay, so I think that's a very critical idea in terms of the insight it gives us into Eliyahu at the very least. So vayi yamim rabim. Okay, this might be in contrast to the Malbim. It was a while, right? And Eliyahu is still up north, you know, Bitzidon with the Tzarfatid. V'dvar Adonai hayal Eliyahu b'shana hashlishit leimor leich hera el achav. So go and see Achav, right? And I will bring rains onto the earth. Now, if you're Eliyahu HaNavi, this is probably like the worst message you can get. Because for him to have to appear to Achav would have been very difficult. You know, you have to understand, Eliyahu is not interested in rubbing elbows, you know? Some people enjoy proximity to power no matter how corrupt that power is. That's not Eliyahu HaNavi. And so the idea that he has to go and see Achav, not his cup of tea. Second, Vietnam Atar al Pnei Adama, did they deserve it? So it's interesting you know, that the Radak says that unbeknownst to Eliyahu, you know, who wasn't, didn't have his finger on the pulse of the nation, there were many people who were chozer b'tshuva. Thousands and thousands of people, the Radak says, he thinks there's evidence. And actually, they deserve the rains to come. And perhaps even more scathing is the Abravanel. The Abravanel says it's a terrible thing. You know, Eliyahu, why wasn't he davening that the people should do tshuva, that the rain should come? Like he's some kind of a passive observer of all of this? And the answer is, yeah. Right? It's justice. If they'll do tshuva, so then they'll deserve rain. If not, then they won't. So the Navi emphasizes that people were really suffering. So in that time, Achav called Ovadia, who was his chief of staff. He was not, you know, in some subordinate position. He was really in a very great position of power. Ovadia haya yareya sadunai me'od, as indicated that Ovadia was a singularly impressive individual. And now we get that background. Vayhi b'hachris izavel as neviyei Adonai, vayikachu vadyo me'a neviyim vayachbim chamishim ish b'me'ara v'chil kolam lacham v'mayim. So when Izavel, and here we see Izavel as an independent agent for the first time, okay, Izavel is driving the purge of religious figures. So when she was killing off all of those who were, you know, divine prophets in the northern kingdom, so Avadi took 100 prophets, and he had 50 each in two different caves, and then astonishingly took on the responsibility, you know, of supporting them. Lechem v'mayim. Obviously, you had to have major funds to support 100 people for one day. Is not a trivial thing to support 100 people every single day, even with lechem v'mayim. That's, you know, enormous resources. So to do this, obviously, was risking his life on a daily basis. You know, people are going to check the logs of the food supplies, especially if it carried on into the years of famine. Right? I mean, that supply of water would have been incredibly precious. But even if one doesn't assume that, the bottom line is that this took Yiras Hashem me'od in great abundance. And here, of course, one sees the echoes of Yaakov Avinu. It wasn't a trivial thing from Ovadia's standpoint that Izavel could come along and slaughter him and slaughter them. But, you know, here, I think we have to pause, and not just in admiration of Ovadiahu, which is certainly inescapable, but I think we have to pause to reflect for a moment on the light that this casts on Eliyahu. Any thoughts about that? So here Izavel is purging all, you know, of the, you know, religious remnants that are left in Shomron, and Ovadia is risking his life, you know, to save these people. What question does that raise? I think any.
Why isn't Eliyahu doing it?
Yeah, for sure. Where's Eliyahu? Apparently he's in good standing with the Lord, right? He can get God to stop bringing rain. Where is he in all of this? Right? And of course the silence is deafening. Vayomer Achav el Avodiyahu, Leich ba'aretz al kol mayanei hamayim vel kol nechalim, Ulai nimtza chatir nechaya sus vafered v'lo nachrid mi'abeima. So Achav says to Ovadia, and this is give us an insight into how dire the situation was. He says, go and search for one blade of grass growing by any body of water. Again, this is a drought, again, 3 years in an incredibly hot part of the world, right? Because all of the animals are dying. So to save the last of the animals, you know, Achav says to Ovadia, who's, you know, the chief of staff, like, you know, this is not some, you know, junior lieutenant, right? His chief of staff, he considers this to be a very significant mission, v'lo od, and not only that, but if you go on, v'yichalku lahem es ha'aretz lavor ba'achav halach v'derech echad levado, v'ovadio halach v'derech echad levado, they actually split up Israel between the two of them, the king and his chief of staff. I mean, this is lavo rechara. By any metric, this is not the standard operating procedure, or generally speaking, within the dignified, activities of a king, to be, you know, doing these things. But, you know, here you have Achav heading off in one direction, Ovadia heading off in the other direction to try to identify, you know, even the smallest measure of a remnant of grass. It's a very humbling scene. I think in addition to that, the symbolism here of Achav and Ovadia heading in opposite directions also speaks, you know, volumes. Vayu Vadyahu Baderach, Ovadya is along the path, Vine Eliyahu Likraso, Vayakireu Vayipol Panav, Vayomer Ha'ataze Adoni Eliyahu. Ovadya immediately recognizes Eliyahu Hanavi, and he amazingly refers to Eliyahu as his Adon, his master. Now that in its own right is a capital offense, because to refer to anybody besides the king, Belashon Adnas, we know, is a Moreid B'Malchus. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, what did Uriah HaChiti ever do to deserve, what happened to him? And one of the perspectives that Chazal bring to bear, obviously this has to be, you know, studied very carefully to appreciate in a much fuller context, but that he referred to Yoav and not David as his Adon, Adoni Yoav, Basadeh, V'am Basadeh. So to refer to anybody besides the king as his Adon is a very major statement. That too takes a real gumption. Vayomer lo ani, so Eliyahu says, it is I. Lech emor ladonecha, but he says, no, your Adon is Achav. And you can hear almost the, you know, the biting nature of that comment. Hine Eliyahu. Right? Eliyahu apparently doesn't think all that much of Ovadia, and we'll see that in a second. Why? Okay, you know, maybe he saved 100 Nevi'im, but what is, if you're Eliyahu, what problem do you have with Ovadia? He's not Achav or Izevel, but what's the problem here? And it's captured in this expression, Lech emor ladonecha. Don't tell me I'm your master. What's Eliyahu's critique here?
That he works for Achav. That Achav's his master.
You're right. Eliyahu says, don't try to sugarcoat this. Yeah, you're righteous. You're saving people. You can rationalize this however you want. You know, Yareyes Hashem Ma'od. It's all very. You're in league with a Rasha Marusha. Okay, so you're using your office in the best possible way that it could be used. But for Eliyahu, that's a kind of space that he just couldn't ever imagine occupying. You know, as a result of that, you know, Eliyahu is not in a position to save people's lives. But you know, there's a certain purity, and there's a certain black and white quality, if you will, to Eliyahu's thinking. And that's the way that he relates to this. And somebody who's going to be, you know, an employee of Achav and Izevel is somebody that Eliyahu can't really understand. And more on that in a little bit. So Vayomer, so Ovadia's response is very telling. Mechatasi ki ata nosin es avdecha v'yad Achav lamiseni. Don't you understand that he's going to kill me if you just claim, you know, to have appeared? Chai Hashem Elokecha, im yesh goyu mamlacha asher shelo shalach adoni sham levakeshcha. Right? There's a big question. How was the Tzarfatid able to hide Eliyahu? Was he literally trying to hide him? Was he wasn't? But, you know, Achav was searching high and low for Eliyahu to get the reins to come back. V'amru ayin v'hishbiya samlacha v'esagoy ki lo yim tzoeka. And he would make people take an outright oath as to where you were. V'ata ata omer leich, right? And now you're telling me that I should go to Achav. Emor ladonecha hine Eliyahu v'ayani eleich meitach v'ruach adonai yisachol asher lo eda uvasi lagid Achav lo yim tzacha v'haragani v'avdecha yareyas adonai minu urai. Right, this is obviously a bit of foreshadowing here. What's going to happen to you, Eliyahu? Some divine wind is going to carry you away, and then I'm going to get killed for being mizalzel the melech, for you know, engaging in this unwitting act of denigration. Halohu God ladoni es asher asisi barog Izevel snevi'ei Hashem v'achbi nevi'ei Hashem me'a ish chamishim ish b'me'ara v'chalkalim lechem v'mayim. So it's so striking that Ovadia feels the need to sort of plead with his life for Eliyahu. And this is now the second time that we've seen a righteous person, first the Tzarfatit, that you came here, she said, lehaskiras avuni ulehamis es bini, to kill my son. And Ovadia looks at Eliyahu the same way, as the harbinger of death, that Eliyahu wouldn't think twice, you know, about sending him off to his death. Now again, like it's hard to understand. If you look to this person as a religious figure, do you really think Eliyahu is capable of sending you on a death mission? Apparently, for Ovadia, the answer was categorically yes. That is striking. It's also, again, we see Eliyahu's, the first thing that God told Eliyahu to do was Leich Heroel Achav Vetne Matar Al Pnei Haaretz. What has Eliyahu engineered here? God told him, I want you to go to Achav and I'm gonna bring rain. So what scenario has Eliyahu engineered?
It's avoiding the issue.
Yeah, the direct he won't go to Achav. He's just unwilling to do it. So this isn't like, hear the word in Israel today, sarvanut. Right? This isn't like Yonah level sarvanut, but this is say gets Ovadia to go to Achav. Scares him within an inch of his life. And that's also very indicative. Okay. So they'll come back to that. Vayom Eliyahu chai v'nayitz v'os asher amati lefanav ki hayom eira'el elav. So Eliyahu says he's really gonna, and this is asher amati lefanav, that was the introduction that we had to Eliyahu Anavi with Chiel, when Eliyahu says, I've been, spending all my time praying, and, I will appear to him today. Vayilech Ovadio likras achav ayagelo vayilech achav likrat Eliyahu. So Eliyahu is able to engineer a situation where Achav comes to him, not the other way around. Vayilech achav likras Eliyahu. Vayi cheros achav es Eliyahu. Vayomer achav elav ha'ata zeh ocher Yisrael. So remember, if Ovadia reacted, if he exclaimed when he saw Eliyahu, ha'ata zeh Adoni Eliyahu, so Achav is not coming from the same perspective. He means it. He says, Atazel Ocher Yisrael, are you the one who is the curse, the scourge of Israel? A very simple reason. Achav thinks that Eliyahu is responsible for the horrific suffering of the Jewish people. And Eliyahu says, without missing a beat, Vayomer lo acharti es Yisrael. I'm not the scourge of Israel. I'm not their curse. Ki'im ata uvei savicha. V'azavchem es mitzvos Hashem v'teilech acharei ba'alim. But you are, and your family, for all the avodah zarah that you've perpetrated. So this is not what is referred to in the field as a diplomatic line. So they haven't seen each other in 3 years. And Achav says to Eliyahu, is it you, the scourge of Israel? And Eliyahu says, no, actually. But that's you and your family. Right? It's a remarkable exchange. V'ata shlach kevotzei lai es kol Yisrael har ha-karmel. V'esnivyei ha-bal arba-meos v'chamishim. U'nivyei ha-ashira arba-meos ochlei shulchan izavel. So Eliyahu goes for the home run, maybe even the grand slam. He says, I want you to gather everybody. Not going to bring the rains down right away. We have business to take care of. Give me the 400 Nevi'ei Habal and the 450 prophets of the Asherah, 850 prophets total to Avodah Zarah. They're the ones who are Ochlei Shulchan Izevel. And all the Mephoshim make the observation here, which is a very critical observation, that Izevel seems to... Oh, okay, I think I heard somebody say it. That's actually very important. I was going to get to that in a second, that she actually has food. That's very, very, very significant. Effie, was that you? You mentioned that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so she apparently has stocks of food, right? To support 400 people is not a small thing. And everybody is starving. Remember the Tsarfatit, she said, we're going to die. You know, so small way. That, and that Isabel has her own little power center. Right? She's doing her own thing. Be'achris Isabel as Nevi'ei Hashem. She's maintaining her own coterie of prophets. Ve'ishlach Achav v'chol b'nei Yisrael ve'ikbotz es ha'nevi'im al har ha'karmel. So Achav has motivation to do so, right? Because the leverage here is the rain. Ve'igash aliyo kol ha'am v'yomer ad masai atem poschim al shtei ha'si'ipim. Im Adonai Elohim l'chu ha'charav. V'im haba l'chu ha'charav v'lo anu ha'am oso davar. So Elio says, and I'd like to come back to this in just a few minutes. He says, I don't get it, you know. Until when are you going to be hopping back and forth, poseach, literally on the two branches? If God is the true God, so worship God. If Baal's the true God, worship God. But what is this, their, you know, admixtures and inconsistencies and hypocrisies? Vayomer Eliyahu el ha'am, ani nosarti navi l'Hashem levadi, unevei habal arba meos v'chamishim ish. So Eliyahu says, I'm all alone, and the nevei habal are 450 against me. A couple of observations. Apparently the 400 ochle shulchani zevel never came. Mefarshim note that, that Achav apparently could not compel Izevel to send them, and she wasn't willing to send them. But what I'm actually even more taken by is Eliyahu's self-description as Ani nosarti navi l'Hashem levadi. I am alone. Vayivaser Yaakov levad. Eliyahu, again, going back to, you know, the very first shir that we had on his persona, right? That he's the Omed lifnei Hashem. He's the Kololim kulo me'ever echad v'me'ever Hashem. He likes this image of him being the Lone Ranger, the only one. But I think that is more perception than reality. You know, some people thrive off this narrative of being, you know, heroic. Is he really the only one? I mean, what about the 100 Nevi'im that Ovadia says? What about Ovadia himself? Chazal say that Ovadia became a Navi. Is it really so? Ani nosarti Navi l'Hashem levadi? Were there no other good people there? Is it really him against the world? I'm not saying the situation wasn't bad. I'm not saying it wasn't a critical situation. I'm not saying it wasn't dire. It was all of those things. But instead of marshaling the forces that remained, acting heroically in the sense of Ovadia, Haya Yareyas Hashem Me'od, Eliyahu prefers, in ways that we'll begin to, you know, appreciate even more as we get deeper and deeper into the narrative, Eliyahu very, very, very much prefers to have a sense of himself as, you know, it's me against the world. As a matter of fact, there's a major debate amongst the Rishonim. The Radak puts his thumb a little bit on the scale. Did God actually tell Eliyahu to do this? This Hora Shah? And he presents both views. At the end, the Radak comes back and says, "Havel Harishon Karev." The answer that he personally suspects is true is that Eliyahu did this himself. He prayed that God should answer him, but this was his conviction that this needed to happen, that the issue needed to be brought to a head. There needed to be a clarifying moment. God obviously was willing to go along, but Eliyahu's, this wasn't a prophetic mission. This was his vision. We're going to bring things to a head. We're going to solve this once and for all. Okay. And these are the rules of the road. So he says, "Vidin lanu shnayim parim, v'yivcharu lahem pare echad, v'yinatchu v'yasimu al ha'itzim, v'eish lo yasimu, v'ani eses apar ha'echad, v'nasati al ha'itzim, v'eish lo asim." So you guys can pick the par, you know, you get to draft first, whatever it is. You know, do whatever you need to do, and then, you know, I'm going to put it on my altar, and you guys will have your altar, and we're going to, you know, wait and see how this plays out. Ukirasa b'shem Eloheichem, you, right, pray to, you know, whoever you identify as your deity. Vani ekra b'shem Adonai, v'ayah Elohim asher yanev ho'esh, hu ha'elohim, v'ayan kol'am v'ayomru tov ha'davar. So, Eliyahu says, you guys will daven, then I'll daven, and God will answer whoever is, you know, the real one. Boker v'yoda Hashem esar lo, asher lo, v'esar kadosh v'ikri v'elav. A bit like, you know, Aaron and the Adas Korach over here. And the people like the idea. Vayan kola'am, they didn't say na'asa v'nishma. You know, that's the first time we have such a construct. But they say tov ha'davar. It's meant to be a new Kabbalah Satorah, a recommitment. Now, a little bit of a cliffhanger this week. Hopefully, you know, holds people in a measure of suspense, but I actually thought it would be instructive to do it this way. To take a moment just to reflect on, you know, we always get caught up in how this played itself out and the incredible events that proceed from here, but I think the setup itself is at least as instructive in terms of Eliyahu. The first point I wanted to make is that Eliyahu's conception of God, the way that God is going to reveal himself, the true God, how is God going to reveal himself? Is there going to be a smiley face, an emoji? You know, did he set it up such that, okay, you know, you'll daven, I daven, and then, you know, God will, you know, a baskol will come out and serenade us and, you know, sweet tones. No, Eliyahu's concept of God can be described in one word, Eish. Ki Hashem bo Eish yavo. You know, Eliyahu put the fire into the fire and brimstone. That's his idea. That's how God should reveal himself. Now, by the way, I just wanted to point out, everybody's still waiting for water. You know, what were the rules of engagement here? God said to Eliyahu, "Lech hiro'el achav v'etnam matar al p'nei ha'aretz." So he didn't go to Achav, he made Achav come to him through Ovadia, but God apparently wants to bring the rains. But Eliyahu needs there to be this climactic moment. It has to be in a moment of total clarity. All right? Harav Chazak Bishomron. The famine is intense in Shomron. The human suffering is real. But Eliyahu, again, as the Radak says, it precipitates this moment, this great clarifying moment. The rains, you know, can't come without that clarification. And finally, maybe, you know, again, you had somebody drop a 10 most famous psukim in Tanakh, you're going to get a candidate here. Ad masay atem poschim al shtei ha-si'ipim. As classic as that line is in any context, it can really only be appreciated in the context of Eliyahu's personality. Eliyahu means it in every sense. How is it possible for people to live like this? You know, one day they worship God, the next day they worship Baal, the third day they worship both of them, the fourth day they're not sure. You know, and Eliyahu says, with, I think, absolutely sincere incredulity, how can you live like this? Eliyahu would have an easier time relating to somebody like, you know, Izavel. If you want to serve Baal, so serve Baal. It's exactly the problem he had with Ovadia. You work for Ahav. You work for Ahav. Don't say Hataza Adoni Eliyahu. Ahav Adonecha. Right? He wasn't being chas on Ahav's kavod. That wasn't his point. Right? Eliyahu has no problem insulting Ahav, you know, mercilessly. But the point is, what is this? You work for Ahav by day and you play hero at night. Eliyahu doesn't understand people. And this isn't to exonerate them for their hypocrisy and their avodah zarah, but, you know, last time we checked, people are inconsistent. People, in that respect, can seem very hypocritical because they're unable to meet even their own professed standards. That is not something that Eliyahu can understand and relate to. Eliyahu feels, in the course of this horasha, you know, which in his mind, as we'll talk about, is totally justified under the circumstances, and obviously, to a great extent, God affirms that. But Eliyahu's perspective is there. We're going to clarify this once and for all. They're going to see whatever they need to see. Fire is going to come down from the heavens, and then everything is going to be clarified. And of course, that's both entirely right and entirely wrong at the same time. It's entirely true, but it won't last, because the same reason that people are hypocritical and don't live up to their own standards and are poseach al shtei asi'ipim, that same phenomenon is going to express itself, as, you know, we'll discover, you know, because 5 minutes after they have this clarifying moment, they'll go back to being the people that they are. You can see here the limitations of, you know, Eliyahu's approach and his leadership, because to lead is to interact with, you know, like I have this saying, which is a bit of a tautology, if you will, but I find it meaningful. The average person is average. And that implies many things. Amongst those things, there, yeah, they do things that aren't entirely sensible. They certainly don't live up to Eliyahu's standards. Ad masay atem poschim al shtei asi'ipim was really how Eliyahu felt. He couldn't relate to it. He couldn't relate to Ovadia, but certainly couldn't relate to them. And that's going to be an unresolved issue. You know, this isn't the first of the series. This is number 3 of 6. This is not an issue that's going anywhere. God has given Eliyahu many opportunities and many years to try to develop a sense of empathy. And coming back to the Abravanel's observation, where was he davening for the people? If you say we have to bring a terrible famine and drought because the Avodah Zarah is intolerable, okay. But, you know, should be fasting and praying and, you know, not just enjoying your, you know, bungalow up in, you know, Tzidon. It's a strange thing. Just to conclude with one final observation, because I think this is almost despite oneself. I think it's so interesting when you think about Eliyahu's purity, his intolerance for what he sees as hypocrisy, even in Ovadia, he doesn't see Ovadia as somebody the way that we see him as, you know, Yareis Hashem Ma'od or Yareis Hashem Minu Urai. He sees Ovadia as a mixed figure, you know, Adonecha Achav. So I think it's just ironic in life, and that there's a deep critique here. Even the purest of people whether or not they acknowledge it, eventually live with a certain degree of compromise. I find it remarkable that of all the people in Tanakh, and you sort of line them up for me and say, who's going to be responsible for the most famous Hora'ah Shah, that is to say, the most famous example that we have in Tanakh and all of Jewish history of abrogating the Torah for some greater cause, which is inherently an ambivalent thing. Inherently an ambivalent thing, right? Especially if you agree with the Radak, that this wasn't divinely mandated, that this was what he decided to do. Now, you know, a purist is a purist. A purist, you know, that's shchutei chutz, that's an iser kares. That can't happen. That's outside of the rules. That would be part of the problem, not part of the solution. The very idea of a hora'ah shah, you know, as the Rambam describes, the Rambam gives a very famous analogy in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. Anybody happen to remember the way that he describes a hora'ah shah? How is it possible that there's a mechanism in the Torah for abrogating a particular mitzvah for some greater good? Like in Eliyahu's mind, there's a greater good here because people are going to be brought towards recognition of God. Okay. So what's the model that justifies that? So the Rambam, I'll just give a hint, you know, gives a good medical analogy, at least the way that he understands it. And he says, you know, sometimes in medicine, it's necessary to perform an amputation to save the organism. Right? You know, sometimes you need to do something like that because saving the life is the most important thing. Saving a limb would be good, but, you know, if it's infected. And, you know. Okay, so, you know, like that's kind of a last resort. You know, the vascular surgeon doesn't come in and say, okay, well, we have a number of options. You know, we could go for the amputation or, you know, we could try medicine. Yeah, but let's do the... No, it doesn't work that way, right? It's a last resort. So it's inherently a compromise of something very valuable for something of greater value, of the limb for the life. The fact that Eliyahu, of all people, would be the one to orchestrate, to engineer, initiate, and orchestrate the greatest Hora'ah Shah is itself a critique of his orientation towards the people. Is the Hora'ah Shah not a form of compromise? Now, he'll tell you there's a greater good. Hashem Hu Ha'Elokim. We'll get there next week. They should realize, you know, we have to bring things to a head-to-head confrontation. But this is, I think, very subtle, but a very deep critique of this kind of an approach in life. Because you can only claim purity for so long, and then eventually people have to live with some measure of compromise. It's all a question of what you deem justifiable. And here, you know, I think with no small measure of irony, Eliyahu has to make an enormous sacrifice. This isn't, like I said, this is an Isser Kares. And not only that, you know, a little over time, but just make one observation. This is sort of playing into the original sin of Malchus Yisrael, the northern kingdom, in the sense that the very first thing they did was cut themselves off from the Beis HaMikdash. So to give any kind of a stamp on that and say, okay, fine, we'll have this reality show, you know, up at Har HaKarmel, in its own right, is kind of a concession to that. So the fact that Eliyahu could reconcile himself to this, I think, is very striking. As a matter of fact, one of the points that the Abravanel makes in this context says, you know, it wasn't that the Nevi'ei HaBaal were fools, but they thought a major advantage that they had in this forthcoming contest was that they knew that it was actually against the Torah. So they figured Eliyahu is ace in the hole, so he's going to, you know, be able to appeal to God. But in their own sort of conference about whether or not to, you know, join in, you know, with this, so their response is very telling. They get together and they say, well, you know, we've got a reasonably good chance of success because you know, Eliyahu will be doing this in abrogation of the laws of the Torah. People knew that you weren't supposed to bring korbanos outside the Beis HaMikdash if you were a religious Jew. So they felt that it greatly increased their odds for success. There are other factors as well, but, you know, they saw this as, you know, Eliyahu's finally cracked. We can't believe Vayan Kola'am Vayamru Tov HaDavar. They were excited about this. So again, from the beginning, there's no praying on behalf of the people. Eliyahu has to be sent. Eliyahu doesn't seem to entirely willing to carry out the prophetic mission in the sense of God tells him to appear to Ahav, he has Ahav appear to him. There's the interaction between Ovadia and Eliyahu where it's not like Eliyahu gives him big yashir koach and a big hug and says, you know, when all of this is over, you're going to be promoted. So, you know, they it's a very cold exchange, and you know, Ovadia frankly is very afraid of him. Much like the Tsarfatit, unfortunately. And then, you know, ultimately, the concession, if you're willing to call it that, of Eliyahu HaNavi, in this context, to say, okay, we're going to bring God down in a ball of fire, Hashem Ba'esh Yavo, and we're going to sacrifice a very significant aveira in the process of Shchut Eichot. I think that represents a kind of a major critique of the position that Eliyahu has staked out of seemingly being unwilling to deal with any, you know, any imperfections or the character that Ovadia represents of someone working for Achav by day but doing very righteous things by night. Ad Masay Atem Poschem Al Shnei Asiipim. Eliyahu seems to have held out hope that, you know, absolute purity was possible. And ultimately, it's not clear that that's really the case. So God willing, next week what we'll take a look at is how this comes to the crescendo. Hopefully, rains will come, you know, for the Jewish people. And where, you know, God sends Eliyahu next. Eliyahu has been sent number one to the Jordan, number two to Sidon, number three back to Achav. Where is Eliyahu going to be sent next? So next week, God willing, we'll take a look at, you know, how the reality scene plays itself out, as it were, and then to think a little bit about where does that leave Eliyahu, what is his future with respect to his prophetic mission.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, have a great night.
Thank you.